Welcome to a very special edition of Rossafari Zoo News, Truth for Toki. Here is your host at the Rossafari Zoo Newsroom, John Rossi.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to a very special episode of Rossafari Zoo News. Y'all, we're going to get right to the issue today. I'm sure most of you have heard, whether on my most recent Zoo News episode or just by existing in the zoo social media world, but the Dolphin Company have announced their intention to remove Lolita, possibly the oldest orca in captivity, from her home at Miami Seaquarium and release her into a sea pen in the Pacific Northwest, and have even talked about completely releasing Lolita. There are also two dolphins involved in this relocation, and this is a problem, y'all. This is really bad. I'm a big fan of looking at all sides of the issue, and in this case, there really is only one side. So I'm going to talk to y'all about this here a little bit, but first, I'd like to introduce you to Shanna Simpson. She is a member of a team called Truth for Toki. And, if you're wondering why it's Toki and not Lolita, you'll find out. This is a group of former trainers, veterinarians, and other people that have worked with Lolita who are desperately trying to prevent this move as they believe it will lead to Lolita's death. Now, there are a lot of other experts who have weighed in on this. And, after the interview, I'll touch on some things that we might not get to in the interview. But I want to make it really clear that the person you're going to hear from and the group they are representing is someone who has nothing but this whale's best interests at heart, and is also someone who does not currently work with this whale, meaning they're not trying to preserve their job or anything like that. So without further ado, let's get to that conversation, and then we can talk further afterwards. All right. Well, hello there. And I promise that won't be the only pun probably, but we are here to talk about a serious subject. So can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Shanna Simpson, and I am currently the animal curator at the Topeka Zoo and Conservation Center in Topeka, Kansas. And formerly, I was a trainer at the Miami Seaquarium from 2002 to 2009. And I was a Toki trainer and her senior trainer for 6 years while I was there.
Wow, that's awesome. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This issue is driving me crazy, and I can't imagine how much it's driving y'all crazy.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's just blown up over the last week, and it is, you know, it's consuming everything, you know, my sleep, you know, my job, everything. So but it's super important, and it's near and dear to my heart. And I just think it's super important to get the message out from the people who actually work with this whale.
Yes, absolutely. And so my goal with this episode is I've been doing a ton of research and talking to people even who can't speak on record and all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
So yeah. I will supplement whatever we don't get to or whatever I think is important that we don't get to. But I want you to do the heavy lifting here because you know Toki and I don't. And so can you explain to my listeners? I mean, I've talked about it a little bit on the pod, but can you explain what's going on?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Toki was captured off the coast of Washington State in the mid-60s. She was estimated to be anywhere from 4 to 6 years old. Obviously, it's hard, you know, it's a little challenging to tell how old the animal was. And then she was moved to the Miami Seaquarium in 1970. And ever since that, you know, when she was brought over, it has been very controversial, obviously. And even whenever I was there, we always had protests. We always had people, you know, free Lolita. She should be in the wild with her family. I mean, that has never been anything new. But within the last almost 2 weeks now, things have really heated up. And the Miami Seaquarium has announced, and with, you know, the dolphin company that owns them has announced that they are going to be moving Toki to a sea pen in the Pacific Northwest in Washington State. And then eventually their goal is to release her. So obviously it's getting very heated and very real that this could happen. However, I am extremely skeptical for several reasons, which I'm sure a lot of them will be going over today on your podcast. So that's kind of what's going on in the nutshell. The group that I'm with is called Truth for Toki. You know, we've got all the social media pages going. We've got a website. We're doing tons of media interviews every day. And, you know, basically who we are is we're a group of former Toki trainers and veterinarians and caretakers who have, you know, had a very close relationship with Toki over the past years. We have trainers from the early 80s all the way up until within about 5 years ago. So we have a wide range of people. You know, it's been, you know, on the fun side of this, obviously, I don't enjoy all this is going on. It absolutely breaks my heart. But on the fun side, I've been able to, you know, get to see my former coworkers. And, you know, I just loved working at the Miami Sea Aquarium. It's some of the happiest times of my life. And I miss it a lot. It's been so fun to really reconnect with all my old coworkers and us to kind of unite to help this animal that we're all so fond of.
That is a really nice perk of an otherwise crappy situation. And I think it's important to be able to see those things. And I also think that I have to say that watching the coordinated effort of Truth for Toki jump up so quickly. And then like when I reached out to try to set up this interview and everything, like it was so professionally handled. And so honestly, I think some of the zoos and aquariums that I talk to regularly could learn from y'all. It's amazing. But I think that speaks to, I mean, this was an issue that y'all didn't know was going to be happening up until 2 weeks ago.
Correct.
And now it's like so many people who love this whale jumped into this amazing organization and have built it so quickly and so effectively, which I think speaks to how passionate you are about it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got people from, you know, all walks of life. There's a lot of us that are still in the animal care field, you know, like myself, I still work with animals on a daily basis. We have a couple of Toki trainers that are now lawyers. We have some that are, you know, professional videographers. We have some that are social media people. And so it has been quite, I mean, we are like the absolute A team. We have got everybody that we need to make this a very successful, you know, movement, if you will. Now, the Toki trainers and Truth for Toki, you know, we have no dog in this fight. We don't have any money. You know, we don't have any money to be bought or won or spend or lose. We have no money in this. We have no political agenda. Our main concern, our number one concern is Toki. That's what we care about. And that is all we care about. So I love to keep talking about that, you know, we are all dedicating any free time that we have to help this animal and to help educate people of what and who she really is, because the people that are making these decisions, you know, they don't know her. You know, they've seen her once or twice, they hear things, they read things on websites, but they don't know her like we do. So, you know, we are the experts on Toki, and we really just want to get the message out of what we think and what we know is going to happen to her if this plan actually goes through.
Yes. And I think that's so important to say. We're not here to talk about cetacean captivity. We are not here to talk about SeaWorld or anything else. We are here to talk about one specific whale. And I think that's really important. So we're going to set all that other crap aside.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Toki. Tell me who she is. Tell me what her personality is like.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So, like I said, I worked with her for over 6 years. I was her main trainer. So I had a very close relationship with her. As cheesy as it sounds, it was so magical. And I just have nothing but the most amazing memories from my time there. She's obviously very smart, very fun to work with, so inquisitive. She loves her trainers. And let me be clear. She'd not love all her trainers. She was so smart, you know, that she would definitely discriminate between some people, and she picked people that she liked. And there were some people that she really didn't like, which I think I love when animals do that, because it just really shows their intelligence and their, you know, their ability to decipher between people and to tell us apart and our mannerisms. And she's just an incredible animal. So I had a really good relationship with her. We got along really well from day one. She gave me a little bit of hassle. You know, with new trainers, she likes to kind of test you and and kind of see what your reaction would be. It's hilarious. I mean, she doesn't do anything bad. It's just little stuff. Like she'll, you know, you'll ask her for a behavior or you'll feed her fish and she'll just like spit out the fish and look at you and be like, what are you going to do? Like, so she would test you. And it was just so funny. You know, she just made me laugh. And, you know, as a senior trainer, I got to teach a couple of Toki trainers under, you know, who came up underneath me, and just watching them squander under her. She really taught us a lot, let's be honest. Cause she was so, just so smart. And, you know, she loves playing. She loves playing with her toys. She loves playing with her trainers. Like I would, she had this big like mat that floats on the surface of the water. It's like a big, big foam mat. And I would put the mat in the pool and I would get on the mat and just kind of float in her pool. And she would come over and she would pick me up on her back on the mat and just like float around, just kind of swim around. And we would just literally just sit there together for like hours. And she just loved to just spend time with her trainers. That is her absolute favorite thing. Obviously, besides fish, I think she would probably choose salmon over me. But sometimes it's questionable because I do think I had a good relationship with her. But yeah, so just, she was just so fun to work with. And I really didn't have any major issues with her. She's just an incredible animal. Obviously, I've been working with animals for over 23 years now. And she's my number one. She's my number one girl.
Aw, that's awesome. And, you know, in your time with her and seeing her relations with humans and everything, what would happen? I mean, let's assume she would survive the transport to the sea pen. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what do you think would happen if suddenly she's out in a sea pen or if they completely free her and she's just out in the ocean without those relationships?
Yeah, so I just think that, I mean, the number one word that I would use to describe any of this talk is cruelty. I think that that is the utmost cruel thing to do to an animal who just, she's been under human care since 1970. And, you know, and like you said, you know, it's very controversial. She was captured. Should that have happened? No, we can all agree that she should not have been captured. You know, those killer whales should not have been taken from the wild and put into aquariums. Like, you know, I think we can all agree on that. It doesn't happen anymore in the United States. It is illegal. So, that's neither here nor there, but that's what happens, you know, and unless you have a time machine, that can take us back to the 60s, we can't change that. So, you know, her being in human care since 1970, she's developed those bonds, you know, the humans are her family. You know, I like to compare it to like your dog at home. You know, dogs are pack animals. They historically, they go in packs. They're like a member of the Canidae family, you know, canids, and they're pack animals. So whenever you have a pet at home, you're their family, you know, that you're their pack. And so that's what's happened to Toki, you know, and just putting her in a sea pen, you know, or even in the wild, you know, it's just cool. She will be extremely stressed out. Not only will, you know, her humans not be around near as much, but, you know, just the environment as a whole, you know, she's just an animal who doesn't like change. I mean, we had to be very proactive with her training plan and with her habitat, that if there was any kind of change happening in her environment, we had to be ready and plan ahead so she did not get stressed out. And I'm talking about little things, like when we would change a song in her show, like we had some songs, you know, in her show, we would change it. Like for several years, it was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, you know, Good Vibrations.
Nice.
That was I know, it was epic, right? I love that song. So that was one of the songs that was in her show. And we updated our show, you know, made it a little bit more modern with some new music. And she was just like, what? This is not Marky Mark. I can't handle this. You know, and she just, you know, so we had to play that music for her and we had to kind of desensitize her to new things. You know, and I, one time, you know, we try to get real creative with enrichment with animals in human care. To make them or to help them to elicit natural behavior, right? That's one of our goals, is to make sure that we can keep things as close to the wild as we can. So I made these, like, if you picture like a water balloon and you put food coloring in the water balloon and then you freeze them. Then you, whenever they're frozen, you peel the balloon off and you've got these really cool marble, gigantic marble looking things. So like colored ice balls is what we call them. And so I made these. I thought, this is unique, you know, a new toy for her and something for her to play with and munch on or whatever. I gave them to her and she's absolutely terrified. you know, she swam to the bottom of the pool. You know, we saw some anxious behavior from her. She swam to the opposite end of the pool and was sunk down to the bottom and wouldn't come up for a little while. And so we just, you know, anybody that works with Toki knows that she does not handle change like well at all. So, you know, putting her in a sea pen with, you know, water that is not treated. You know, she has treated water. I mean, that's something else that people are thinking about. She has treated water. It's chilled to 50 degrees. She has gigantic chillers on her pool. It's always 50 degrees. You know, she's in the Miami climate. So even just changes like the weather in the Pacific Northwest, you know, the water temperature changes, you know, sea pens, if you, the sea pens collect a lot of trash. I mean, they're basically fences in the ocean. So they collect a lot of trash. So being around trash, I mean, it is just absolutely going to be so stressful for her. I just can't, it just breaks my heart just even thinking about it. And I know I keep saying that, but it's just so true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, in the last couple of years, I know that, you know, even the AZA and stuff have moved away from saying that zoos are there to reintroduce populations. There are specific reintroduction programs. But we've come to realize that we can't just be like, oh, hey, you know, cheetahs have gone extinct now. We're going to take them out of zoos and put them in the wild, because we've all seen cheetahs in zoos. They're not going to last 5 minutes in the wild.
No, I love that you pick cheetahs, because they are one of the least smart animals, I think, in the animal kingdom. It's hilarious you chose to say cheetah. And that's a perfect example. Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, that's the reality, is that zoos and aquariums, you know, we are a fail safe for animal populations in the wild. Absolutely. I think we can all agree on that. However, taking these animals that have grown up in human care or are born in human care, you know, they just, historically speaking, there are not very many success stories of them being introduced back into the wild. So once they've grown up in human care anyway.
Yeah, no, there are separate reintroduction programs. We talk about those on the pod all the time. But yeah, this ain't gonna work, especially with something like a whale. Now, we've talked about some of the reasons why the sea pen is a bad idea. But can we talk about whale transport and how old she is? What are your thoughts on this?
Please, let's talk about transportation of animals. So, you know, I work at an accredited zoo right now, obviously, and we just transferred 6 tigers over the course of a year and a half, you know, for breeding reasons and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, animal transfers are stressful for the animals. You know, there's, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat that. It's a completely new environment. It's, you know, the transportation alone is weird for them, you know. So transportation can be scary. So you have to acclimate your animals to them. You have to make sure that your animal is healthy. You know, for our tiger transfers here, we had a veterinarian. Our veterinarian completely evaluated them. You know, we did a complete exam on them where we took blood. We, you know, did all the samples, fecals, exhale. You know, we did radiographs, all the things to make sure that this animal is healthy enough to be transported. And I can't stress that enough. You know, you have to have a health certificate with that animal whenever they're being transferred. And there's just absolutely no way that Toki is going to pass a health, you know, it be healthy enough to have a health inspection, you know, and to be able to have that health certificate to transfer. The sea aquarium has not been silent on her health over the last 5 years. It is majorly in the decline. She's been on antibiotics, long-term antibiotics. They can't take her off them because when she does, she crashes. So it's just mind-blowing to me that you think, you know, that people think that it's okay to transfer a 58-year-old unhealthy geriatric animal that far. Like, we're talking, you know, you drop the pool, she's on her belly without water, which obviously is extremely stressful for cetacean. You put her on a stretcher, you will crane her out. So basically she would be like a flying killer whale in the air on a crane. And then you put her on, you know, in some kind of modified transport pool type thing is how I can describe it. You put them on put her on a truck, drive her to the Miami airport, fly her, put her on a plane, and all this stuff. I mean, we're talking where we're at right now before we even take off. We're at already probably like 6 hours at least that alone is going to take. You put her on the plane, flies to Washington. I mean, the flight alone to Washington is not a short flight. We all know that. You land your plane in Washington. You got to get her off the plane. You got to drive her. You got to get her off, you know, out of the transport pool that they didn't put her in. It's just, I just do not think people who don't work with animals have no idea what an animal transport takes. It's stressful on the people. It's stressful on the animal. It's dangerous for the animal and the people. So it is extremely detailed and very, methodical, very delicate. So the transport alone is just, it's terrifying. It's terrifying for me to think about her transporting.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I know, SSPs are constantly thrown into minor crises because as breeding wrecks happen, every animal, like you said, gets a thorough physical exam. Mm-hmm. And if something's wrong with it, it doesn't move. And we're talking about like fennec foxes and red pandas and like little things that you just put in a little crate. And they don't get to do the thing. There is not an SSP that would allow any animal with the health issues that you know, Toki has to be moved. Period.
100%.
Much less an orca.
Absolutely. I mean, you completely nailed it. Like, well, and I think that just shows you that these people that are planning it, you know, let's be honest, they're politicians. They're politicians. They're feel-gooder, emotional, money-oriented people who want to move this whale. I mean, they're clearly people who have no experience with animal care, have no experience with husbandry or transportation or any kind of, animal care expertise whatsoever. That is very obvious that they just really, this all goes back to money. It all goes back to money and human emotion. That's what all this is about.
How long, and I know that there's no way to know this, but, you know, based on what we do know, how long would Toki live if just left alone at the Seaquarium? Like, best case scenario, what's her lifespan looking like? Because she's old,
She's very old. She's, here's the thing. So some people say she's the oldest. Some people say she's the second oldest. You know, there's Corky at SeaWorld, and Corky has been in human care longer than Toki. But Corky was estimated to be about 2 when she was captured, and Toki was estimated to be about 4 or 5. So it is debatable that Toki is, in fact, the oldest killer whale in human care. Now, what you got to remember is, you know, typically animals live longer in human care than they do in the wild for several reasons. You know, there's no predators. They have restaurant quality food. They have veterinary care. We give vitamins. We give medicine. We are able to intervene whenever they're sick or hurt. So Toki, in theory, it's just really hard to say. I haven't worked there in a while, but from what I hear from friends that still work there, you know, she's not in great condition. So, however, she's being managed with medication. She's being managed. I know for a while there, her health was really, really scary. I think they were, thinking that this might be the end. I want to say it was about a little over a year ago. They were doing what we call vet assist on her, where they have to drop the pool and they give her injections and they give her hydration and water. And but you can't do that stuff in a sea pen. You know, you can't drop the sea. You can't put her in a stretcher. You cannot get your hands on an animal when they're in that kind of an environment. So, here at my zoo, we have some geriatric animals. We have, 2 19-year-old lions. We have a 33-year-old sun bear, which is the oldest sun bear in human care in North America. So, we have to take certain precautions with these geriatric animals, always being aware of the temperature outside and always being aware of any slight, any something that's off with them, because that could mean the end for them, right? So Toki's no different. And if she's in a sea pen environment, being able to intervene in a health crisis is impossible.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I don't know. I don't know how much longer she has. I would love to visit there. I would love for the Seaquarium to let Truth for Toki in. The people that have worked with her the longest, the people that are there now have not been there very long. They're very inexperienced. And they don't have a whole lot of killer whale experience. We would love to get in there. Those of us that have been in the animal care industry for a while and are husbandry professionals, we would love to get in there and look at her and see what she looks like, see what medication she's on, and just kind of evaluate what's going on. And I think that's what the Seaquarium really needs to do, is they need to get people in there who don't have an agenda and want to just do what's best for Toki.
Absolutely. And, you know, just to touch on what you said a little bit further, with the current care team, you know, on the record, I'm sure they're not saying anything or are being team players, but off the record, there are people on the current care team who are just as concerned as you are, who yeah. are making their, you know, voices heard. I have heard from people. I Good. Will not say names or anything, but Good. Just so you know, when people listening, even people who do have a vested interest, like in what's going on right now, are still more concerned about Toki and don't want this to happen. They just can't say anything about it for fear of reprisal. Yeah. And then if they're removed, yeah. then you've got, you know, her allies even further away. So it's Absolutely. Worth mentioning, though.
I know. I love that. And I really hope, that's the case. And I have heard that some people are speaking out and speaking to other. And I love that because, you know, it's so hard in the animal care industry. It's really hard to get into, you know, it's hard to get a job in the animal care field. You know, it's a hot commodity. Everybody wants to work with animals. So like you have a job that you love and you don't want to ruin that, you know, and you don't want to be blacklisted in the industry. And so my heart just breaks for the trainers that are there who do love her and have her best interests at heart. My heart breaks for them. I can't imagine how they feel about all of this. And rumor has it, and I don't know, I've heard that they didn't know about any of this until the press conference.
That is what I have been told as well. Yeah.
Yep. The staff did not know, and they found out the same time the rest of the world did, which is just insane, which tells you that they think something, they know people are going to, you know, and they're including their staff are going to be in upheaval about this.
Absolutely. If there were going to be a bunch of people cheering this on and promoting this, this would have been leaked to the press. This would have been leaked to people like me and some of the other podcasts out there so that we could all, as soon as it came out, release our special thing and be like, woo!
Yeah.
And that's just not happening. And
that's not what happened.
No. Uh-huh. And so far, you know, the various bodies like the ABMA and IMATA and such, they've all put out, and I understand they have to be a little guarded. We don't know the full sure. plan or anything yet, but yeah. they have all put out statements that basically say this does not appear great. I can't find anything supporting it in my research, except Agreed. For the Dolphin Group. And they're the ones right. doing it. And PETA. And I PETA. Have thoughts on PETA. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to go into all of that now.
But, yeah, we probably shouldn't go into that. You can see my blood pressure rise.
same. But, you know, for an organization that's never made an animal's life better and has killed over 2,000 animals a year and has an 83% kill ratio in their shelter, according to the Virginia mm-hmm. Department of Agriculture, you would think they would do more to help animals. Okay, we're going to leave it at that, though.
I love that you just snuck that in there. That was absolutely genius.
Why, thank you.
I'm all here for that.
Yes, but... So, you know, I guess I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second now.
Okay, let's do it. And I think that's important to talk about both sides.
Yeah, I do too. And I keep trying. I actually was trying to find more info on the other side. And it's really hard when you actually go to, like you said, scientific papers and stuff like that, rather than just looking at, you know,
emotions.
Yeah. But the one thing I will say is that your group is composed entirely of people who, while you don't have any financial need or financial commitment to this right now, there's no benefit for you.
Right.
You could all arguably be cast as the villains if Toki goes out and has a great last couple of years and thrives and everything. So how do we know that you're not that?
I love that question. I think that's a fabulous question. You know, I think we obviously adore Toki, like love her. If we thought, even if there was a 10% chance that this was going to be successful and that Toki was going to swim off into the sunset and be able to hunt on her own, live in the ocean again, integrate with fully with killer whales again, if we thought there was even a tiny chance that that was going to happen, we would 100% be behind them. You know, we love her and we want what is best for her. And if we thought that that was going to happen and that could be a reality, we would get behind it. But we, with 100% certainty, the people who know this animal can guarantee you that that is not going to happen. That is not reality. That's not the way she is. That's not her personality. That is not her demeanor. And then not to mention, you know, with everything that happened with Keiko, we all know that story intimately very well. We all studied it. We all watched it. We all have friends that were part of his life. We know the intimate, dirty details of Keiko. And so, and Toki, you know, is over twice the age of Keiko. And she's in significantly worse health. So we absolutely would get on board with this, John, if we thought it was going to be successful.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And, you know, I was going to put in a little segment about Keiko after we spoke, but since you brought Keiko up, Keiko was another orca that they attempted to release in a very similar way. But Keiko was much younger, had only been in captivity for 18 years, as opposed to over 50 years in captivity for Toki. And there are not only the opinions of the people that were involved in the project, but also actual studies done by the Greenland Institute and the NOAA Fisheries that showed that he was truly miserable. There was a day where he put his head on a boat, or not a day, excuse me, period, where he put his head on a boat for 2 days vocalizing in ways that it seemed from the people who knew him best that he was trying to get more human connection. He was miserable. These animals, whether you think this is right or wrong, you know, again, with cetacean captivity, cool, we can debate that till we're blue in the face. It's not what we're talking about today.
Right.
He missed people. He missed his people. He missed the life that he knew. There are also studies being done right now that show that elderly animals, the way they start to lose their memories and their comprehension of what's around them, it makes them rely more on things that they have learned like in the past, and knowing their environment is good. There are actually studies that are starting to show that while like in captivity, it's great to change up habitats for younger animals, as they get older, that can actually confuse them and lead to distress. And so the idea of moving a whale from a place she knows, even if you don't think it's a good place for her to be, into an environment that she doesn't know, ignoring the pathogens, ignoring the transport, all those issues, it could still be torture to her. It is animal cruelty at its most basic. And that is what the science says, not just our hearts. Because again, I get it. We all watched Free Willy, man. Like,
I love that movie.
Yeah, right? Like, it's a gorgeous idea, but this does not go well. And sometimes you have to adapt to the actual problem that exists. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, you don't think there's anyone in your group who thinks that she should have been captured, you know, in the wild in the 60s. Right. Totally get that. However, it has happened.
Here we are.
We have to deal with it. And we have to deal with it accurately. And I love how you phrased that. And I love how you tied it into what we know. So thank you for all of that.
No, thank you. Thank you for all those scientific studies about Keiko. That's awesome. I had heard about them, but hearing them again is just, you know, and, you know, Mark Simmons, who wrote Killing Keiko, and he was very involved, you know, in Keiko's life and was his main trainer and everything. And just hearing him talk about it, it's just absolutely heartbreaking what that animal went through. And for anybody who thinks that any part of Keiko's life after he was put in the sea pen was positive, you are crazy. Like, you cannot sit here and look at what happened to that animal and think it was okay. You know, and I see so many people say, well, at least he died free. I just, that mindset is absolutely mind blowing to me. You know, why would you want an animal to die in a horrible, lonely, stressful, fearful death, rather than live in a pool with people that he or she has grown up with and live a really long life? I cannot understand that mentality. It is so foreign and just so borderline evil for me to think that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know that anthropomorphism is sometimes problematic, is often problematic. But yes, I mean, the way that I look at it is like, this would be like taking your beloved sick grandma, shoving her out into a place she's never been before, where none of her friends are allowed to visit, where they do everything completely differently, where she doesn't know even how to go about getting her own food and stuff like that, and saying, hey, at least she's free.
Like, yeah, it's just mind-blowing. Like, what are you talking about, people?
I know. It's so crazy. And, you know, before we move on, I will say, they did say that they're going to send her two pets with her, which by God they called dolphins pets.
I can't.
So annoyed.
When I saw that on the press conference, I vomited in my mouth a little bit. I was like, did he just say that? Like, what?
I know. But can you talk about this and why this is also problematic?
Oh my gosh. Let's talk about the Pacific white-sided dolphins. So the Pacific white-sided dolphins that have, you know, they have lived with Toki for a little over 25 years. We call them lags. Their genus and species name is Lagorhynchus obligatens. So instead of saying Pacific white-sided dolphins all the time, we call them lags. So just a little, if I accidentally slip up and say lag, that's what I mean. So the Pacific white-sided dolphins that have lived with her, almost three decades they've lived with her. They are her conspecifics. They have their language. They talk, they interact, they play together, they chase each other. They are extremely interactive, you know, and Toki is so great with them. Obviously, Toki could kill them in a heartbeat if she wanted to. She is always super gentle with them. And they get along really well. It is a very successful habitat with the killer whale and the Pacific white-sided dolphin. So now let's talk a little bit about the Pacific white-sided dolphins. Like I said, they're almost 30 years old. You know, we've got Li'i, Loki, and then they have one of their offspring that's at the Sea Aquarium. A couple of their other offsprings are at other, I think there's one at Shedd, and I think there's one at SeaWorld San Antonio. So the Sea Aquarium has had a very successful breeding program with Pacific white-sided dolphins, and not many aquariums have. That is something that Sea Aquarium does really well, is Pacific white-sided dolphins. So with that being said, releasing or putting in a sea pen these Pacific white-sided dolphins is just as horrible of an idea as Toki. They have been in human care almost their whole life. And they are adapted to humans, and they love their trainers. They interact with their trainers. They interact with Toki. So they would, and I also know that they have health issues as well. They're geriatric dolphins as well. They also have health issues. I know Li'i has kind of a skin issue going on. Loki is an animal who historically has eaten foreign objects. So that's something that will need to be, you know, considered. You know, will she eat? Oh my, I can't even imagine what will be in the sea pen.
I mean, you think Loki, there are foreign objects in the ocean? Really?
I mean, seriously, what the heck? Like, literally, plastics are a major problem in the ocean right now. So Loki, you know, Loki is a huge concern of mine. You have to watch her whenever a guest would throw something in the pool or something. We would literally dive in immediately and get it before, try to get it before Loki did. It was a concern of Loki eating foreign objects. So there's that. And not to mention, Pacific white-sided dolphins are not native to the waters off of the Washington coast. That is, in my opinion, borderline introducing an invasive species to the wild that is not normally or naturally there. Not to mention Pacific white-sided dolphins. I don't know if you've ever seen them jump. They can jump like 20 to 30 feet in the air. So my question is how high are these sea pen walls going to be? How are you going to contain a Pacific white-sided dolphin? It's going to have to be a huge seawall to contain those dolphins. So it just doesn't make any sense. I think that the reason they're throwing in those dolphins is to make everybody feel fluffy and happy and rainbows and unicorns. Toki's not going to be alone. She's going to have her pets with her.
Her pets.
The biggest joke. I know. I can't. Like, I can't with these people.
Yeah.
So I just think it's absolute asinine to A, to talk about releasing Toki, to B, to call the lags her pets, and to talk about releasing them as well. It's just insane.
I agree. And I have one more thought about this that I wanted your opinion on, which is we're talking about how this is so bad for Toki and for the dolphins. Mm-hmm. And Toki and Loki would be a really great kids TV show, just as a side note. But anyway,
I know.
What are your thoughts on what this would do to the environment that they're being dropped into? Because you were talking about her being on antibiotics and, you know, even though I know, like, you know, captivity should be pretty clean, like, you're still going to have pathogens and stuff, but they're not going to be what's in the ocean, right? Like, how does that work? How do they stop this from becoming a kill-off event in the sea pen area?
Well, you absolutely do not. That is a huge question and a huge risk, which I cannot imagine NOAA would ever sign off on this, or any of the regulating agencies. You know, Toki, you know, like you said, human care, like we test regularly for pathogens in our animals. We do fecal tests regularly. We do respiratory tests. We do, you know, all blood tests. For the most part, we know what they carry. However, the animals in human care are exposed to completely different pathogens than the animals in the wild are, and vice versa. You know, and a big, obviously a big thing is COVID. You know, marine mammals can get COVID. And the animals at aquariums and zoos across the country are exposed to humans. There's a lot of zoonotic disease concern. You don't really have that concern in the ocean on killer whale populations in the wild. There's really no human interaction. So what is Toki going to be exposed to, whether it's at the aquarium, whether it's on her transportation, you know, across the country? What is she going to possibly bring, or the dolphins too, going to bring to the wild animals? Not only the killer whales that are out there, there's dolphins out there, there's sea lions out there, there's seals out there, there's all sorts of other marine mammals there that breathe air that is extremely concerning. Not to mention killer whales and dolphins, they also, you know, go to the bathroom in the ocean, they defecate, they urinate in the ocean. What is going to be in that that could harm the coral and the, you know, all this, the whole ecosystem out there? We all know how delicate it is right now more than ever. So why are we going to introduce anything to the wild that could possibly hurt anything out there? Because let's be honest, the ocean is struggling right now, you know, especially in that area. So just all around everything we talk about, it's just not smart, not wise, just done for money and emotion.
So let me ask you this. I have a theory and I want to run it by you. Okay. What if I told you I think there's absolutely no way that they actually think they're going to be able to do this, that it's just a publicity stunt to shut up the protests and everything, and that they are counting on the government, NOAA, or even just protests of people like us to stop them, and then they can just be like, oh, well, we tried. People can jump on board to try and get credit. And then also, when Toki dies in captivity, because all animals die, they'll be able to say, see, should have let her free. We win. Bah. Yeah. Like, that's my take on this whole thing. I don't actually see it happening, although I think it is important to stay vigilant in case it gets to the point where it might.
You know, I think you are very wise, John. I, too, have that has crossed my mind. I do think this has PR political stunts written all over it. Obviously, we can never be sure. That's why we are being extremely outspoken about this whole situation. You know, everything goes back to money, right? So if you look at the money, you look at the money situation that the dolphin company is in, it's not good. I mean, they're you can look up their financial woes. It's not private. So, you know, I've heard that Toki has cost them over $1 million a month. You know, Toki Stadium is closed. Toki is not bringing in any money. She is bleeding them of resources. And so I do think that this would be a great way to kind of check that box and get that money back and save that money. Please, please, the animal rights organization, Friends of Lolita, please PETA, get this, you know, NFL, you know, owner on board and get some money and put some money in their pocket. I mean, from a business standpoint, this is an option for them. And it's just so sad that this animal is being used as a pawn. And I think that's whenever the animal industry really goes downhill, is whenever you have a zoo or an aquarium that puts money first. You know, that's whenever, excuse my French, if you will, but when the crap hits the fan. As soon as directors or AZA or IMADA or any of these entities start to focus on money or anything above animal care, that's whenever the industry goes down the crapper.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And, you know, the money that Jim Irsay from the Indianapolis Colts and these other people are talking about putting forth, for a significantly smaller amount of money, you could make Toki's remaining days really, really comfortable and really, really happy. Yes. And do so much good for the wild orca populations. Exactly. Out there in research and all that kind of stuff. And also, one thing that I want to remind people, if you're listening to this and you are of the mindset that, hey, money can solve everything and we'll build this CPEN and everything. commitments of money are not the same as actually getting money. And, you know, if Jim Irsay or anyone else wants to commit, you know, however much money they're saying they will, and then tomorrow decide to spend all their money on more Beatles memorabilia, which Jim Irsay is obsessed with. And I mean, me too. I wish I could buy that.
I mean, who isn't?
He would be allowed to do that. And that's actually one thing that happened with Keiko, is that there was a person who said that they would spend as much money as it took to make sure that you know, Orca had a great life. And after a couple of years, just pulled the plug on paying the bills. Yeah. And once you're out there, there's nothing you can do. Yeah. The infinite supply of money that was promised can run out. And I feel like people don't realize that or accept that.
That's because these people are strictly going off of emotion. You know, I keep hearing that, oh, but she can go be with her family. She's going to be back with her mom.
That was the last thing I needed to ask you about. Talk about this mom thing, because this is so effing stupid. I'm so annoyed about this.
I cannot with the mom thing. Okay, first of all, it is by no means scientific. There is absolutely no proof that A, her mother's alive, that B, this killer whale that they're saying is her mom, is even her mom. They have no idea. You know, people have not been studying killer whales very long. You know, they're saying that she could be over 100 years old. We have not even been studying killer whales for 100 years yet. Like, that is completely a guesstimate. That's a completely not scientific and not a fact. So even if, you know, if you look at, I keep going back to Keiko, because we've done all of this before. We did this science experiment. Keiko was a science experiment and it failed. So why are we talking about doing this again? So that's what I keep going back to. But Keiko, you know, they thought that they knew where Keiko's pod was. You know, I do air quotes, thought they knew where Keiko's pod was. And they tried to integrate him into that pod. He never integrated. What you need to realize is that these killer whales in human care, they kind of lose the language, if you will. So like if you were put up for adoption when you were like 5 or 6, you already spoke English for the majority of your life and you were adopted in Spain. You moved over to Spain, you spoke Spanish the whole rest of your life, you are going to speak Spanish. And if your family comes and gets you, you're probably not going to be speaking English to your family. So the whole language thing needs to be considered as well. She doesn't speak killer whale well anymore at all. And that's exactly what Keiko's problem was, is he couldn't speak killer whale well anymore. So it's this whole going back to the family thing is so anthropomorphic. That is not how the animal kingdom works. You know, the chances that she would even still be with her family after all these years are pretty slim. Killer whales do stay in pods and do typically stay with their family, but they branch off as well and go start their own families. They migrate to different places. These people that are saying she's going to go back and be with her family, that's what humans do. That is, animals do not do that. So it's not scientific and it's just based off of feeling.
Yeah. And the whole mom thing, it's a great story. Like, it really is a beautiful story if it was, you know, even a shred of evidence. But no, it's just a pretty story. That bothers me. This bothers me. And I really tried to go into this with an open mind. Like, I really wanted to both sides of this issue and say we need to look at it more. But as I did my research, and I've been spending some time on this last couple of days, and it's rough. All right. So I have taken way more of your time, and I hope that the Topeka Zoo is not mad at me.
No, it's okay.
But tell me how people can help and where they can find everything and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, the group of Toki trainers that have kind of formed, we're just trying to get our message out. So we've got all the social media platforms. We've got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. We have a website. It's all Truth for Toki. So it's Truth and then the number 4 and then Toki, T-O-K-I. So follow us on all of our social media, you know, like, share, comment. We have an email address. We have a way for you to contact us. You know, we would love to talk to people about this. We just want to keep sharing our stories about her, keep speaking for her, because she obviously cannot stand up for herself. She changed all of our lives. So we want to try to help her. So we're here for her. And if anybody needs anything or has any questions, please reach out to us. We're happy to talk.
I love that. Thank you. And, you know, just as one final story that I wanted to share, because we've gone so long, and this is so great. I don't even need to do my follow-up touching on other stuff. We nailed this one. Go team. But I did want to share a story. You know, I am a big fan of red pandas, and I'm not going to say any names of facilities here, but okay. I know a red panda that was a cub. I knew since a cub and got an SSP recommendation and went to a different facility. Now, this is a red panda. This is a juvenile, you know, they reach maturity in about a year. So it's an adult, but barely. And this panda went from a facility that was very hands-on, very loving, they don't treat them like pets, but it's more that behavior than the hands-off approach that the new facility takes.
Okay.
And when that panda got to that new facility where food was still being given, where training sessions were still happening, where the level of care is abso-freaking-lutely incredible, but it's just not as hands-on and as human-to-animal lovey as the new facility is, the panda was massively depressed, really struggled for a long time, and that facility had to work on training and also bend their own rules to make the panda's life more comfortable. And, you know, they found some workarounds and they found a way to make that panda now be comfortable in that situation. But this is not an elderly panda. It is a panda, which is a lot easier to move. And again, this is an animal that was, you know, in captivity and then staying in captivity, not changing all of that. I heard from one of Lolita's trainers that she won't eat food that she likes if it's not cut into the proper shapes.
Yep.
This is not an animal that's going to hunt.
No.
Sorry.
Never.
Yeah, no.
Never going to happen.
This is not happening, folks. This is not happening. So yeah. I guess if you want to go to bed and sleep well this night and you're listening to this, just have faith that there are people working on preventing this and that honestly, a lot of us don't really think that they're actually trying to do this. But boy, we need to be vigilant in case they are.
Absolutely. I mean, they've been talking about this for decades. So this just seems a little bit more real and I think a little bit more scary than it's been in the past. So yeah, you're right. We absolutely need to stay vigilant. So
awesome. One quick last thing I kept meaning to ask you and then we got into other things. I'm so sorry. But Lolita, Toki, how are there these different names? Can you just explain it to people so they understand when they're hearing the different names what they mean?
Yeah. Yeah, so whenever she was brought to the seaquarium, she was named Tokite, and it means shimmering waters. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's what I was taught. It's been a little while since I've been at the seaquarium. So she was named Tokite whenever she first was brought to the seaquarium, and then they decided that they needed a stage name that was catchy and, you know, kind of like Marilyn Monroe. That's not her real name. They wanted a big stage name. That was kind of a big thing back then. You have kind of your movie star name. So they started calling her to the public. They started calling her Lolita. So she is Miami's biggest star, Lolita of the Miami Seaquarium.
So awesome.
we all call her Tokite. Nobody calls her Lolita who works with her.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. Makes sense. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking all of this time. I'm sorry I stole so much of your time.
It's okay. It are you so kidding? Good. I could talk about animals. I could talk about animals all day. And I'm going to start listening to your podcast. I have to be honest. I've never listened to it. But hearing you talk, you know a thing or two about zoos as well.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it.
I'm obviously very zoo-y as well. So if you need anything on that aspect,
we'll have to talk more. Yeah, well,
we should.
Yeah,
I'm on the FELA tag, and I do the AZA safety committee, and okay. Yeah, so
yeah, because my main podcast is I interview people at accredited zoos about their lives, their animals, and connecting them to the public. So we'll talk.
Cool. I love that.
We'll talk. Yeah,
let's do. You have my information.
I'm gonna drop this like as soon as because I don't even think we don't even need to edit anything. This went really well.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have this out as soon as I can, and we'll get the word out.
Well, I'll make sure we share it. Are you gonna tag us in it?
Of course. Oh yeah. Okay. All the things.
We'll make sure we share it too. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great to meet you.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
I mean, there you have it, folks. That says it all. I know I said in the intro, which I recorded before the interview, that I would bring all kinds of extra facts and things that I've looked at afterwards. But it turns out that we talked about all of them in the interview. I did not expect to get so long of an interview. That was awesome. This is a serious issue. And like I said, I don't know what the end game really is, but I know that there is one that is scary. And for Toki, we need to make sure that doesn't happen. So if you can go and follow Truth for Toki at all of these social media sites that you frequent and keep an eye on this situation, they are making suggestions on ways to help and will be putting out true and helpful information about this topic. Thank you all so much for listening. I'm so grateful that I can bring stuff like this to you. And it means a lot to me to know that I have such a passionate fan base who cares. Honestly, it's y'all are amazing. I want to say a quick thank you to all of my patrons, including Laura Schenk and Kristen Dickey, who are my Red Panda level patrons. And just remind y'all that I love you and I'm grateful you're here. And hey, remember, the words Newsy Credits backwards are Steiderk Yiswen.
The Rossifari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossifari or by email at rossifaripod@gmail.com. Rossifari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.